Jesus Christ. If you've been here for the last number of weeks, you know that I have been talking about Dogen, particularly in relation to how he speaks, how he expresses the Dharma, with the use of intimate speech. And so I'm going to continue talking about Dogen today, and then mercifully, for those of you who are not interested in Dogen, I'm going to be going away on vacation for 3 weeks. So. But I personally love Dogen, and I love the subtlety and the beauty of the language that he uses, even if I don't always understand it. And today I'm going to continue that talk a little bit about speech, about language. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about comes out of this book, which is called The Essential Dogen. And it's the writings of the great Zen master. And really what it is, it's not like, for example, it's not the whole Mountains and Rivers Sutra. It's a bunch of excerpts from things. So you can sort of read it and just sit with a few lines, sort of imbibe, take in how Dogen is expressing the way. Now, I know that I've mentioned this a number of times, but whenever I'm asked to speak, whether it's here or in some other situation, you know, I've mentioned I always remember two things. I became a Dharma holder and started to give Dharma talks. The first time I had to give a Dharma talk, I asked Roshi, I said, well, any words of wisdom about what I should say or about speaking the Dharma? And as you probably recall, he said to me, be brief. The other admonition that I have is really an old Quaker saying, which is, don't speak unless you can improve upon silence. Now, I don't think the Quakers were saying literally, don't speak. I think what they were acknowledging was the power of words to create reality. So if you're going to use words, be aware that with those words, a reality will be created. And much of our language creates a reality, which from a spiritual point of view is distorted. This is because language, unless it is used creatively or poetically, it's basically dualistic. And as such, contributes to the perception that the world, the universe, is made up of discrete and separate parts. So if you're a man, then you're not a woman. And if you're a conservative, you're not a liberal. And if the answer is this, then it cannot be that. And the subtle effect, of course, is that linguistic distinctions create an experience in us of separation. And as you all know, most of the, not all, the mystic traditions are seeking to experience the unity, the oneness beneath the perception of separation. Some kind of an awareness or an intuition that there's more than what words and thoughts create. And Dogen was, of course, well aware of the power of language to create an incomplete perception of the world of which we are a part. Now, in The Essential Dogen, Peter Levitt, who is one of the writers of the book, or compilers of the book, writes, our attempt to authentically communicate the subjective, ineffable experience, or non-experience, as Dogen might say, so to authentically communicate the subjective, ineffable experience of realization is hindered by the limiting ability of the very words we use. And he goes on to say, this is Levitt still, no matter how compelling or beautiful they may be, words appeal in the main to the linear thinking mind that thinks in words. So ultimately, cognition can only provide a partial understanding, since it's but one of the ways that human beings know life as it occurs. And Levitt points out that intuition, physical experiences, dreams, and a variety of other ways are also authentic ways of knowing. And to his list, I would add, and we've talked about many times before, that not knowing is also an authentic way of knowing. So even that kind of expression, right, that not knowing is a way of knowing, is the way Dogen would express it. And there's a classic Zen encounter that exemplifies not knowing as knowing. Master Yao Shan was sitting, and a monk interrupted his sitting and asked him, in steadfast sitting, what do you think? And Yao Shan said, I think non-thinking. And the monk replied, well, how do you think non-thinking? And Yao Shan replied, beyond thinking. Now, he could have also just simply said, shh. But this kind of conversation, you know, for some people, they can get a headache trying to understand or follow what's being said here. But this conversation is a wonderful expression of the use of language in a particular way, very careful and subtle use of language, so that the fundamental non-separation of things is not lost in speaking. Dogen talks about thinking beyond thinking as the activity of our zazen itself. And if you read Dogen enough, you will begin to notice how Dogen points out over and over again how through speech we continually lose a sense of oneness. An example of this is Dogen's response to Zen Master Jiangyan's famous statement, which is about how words and practice affect each other. And that statement was, a painted rice cake does not satisfy hunger. And the conventional way of understanding that, and it is direct and a direct expression, is that the picture of a rice cake will not stop us from being hungry. That words about enlightenment will not satisfy our desire for that experience. But Dogen's take on this statement is that a painted rice cake is in itself an expression of enlightenment. Now that's going even deeper and more subtly. So if enlightenment means oneness, that which means nothing is left out, then everything is an expression of enlightenment. So while the statement, painted rice cakes do not satisfy hunger, is an admonition, is a warning not to confuse language with experience, at the very same time that that's true, Dogen is saying that statement itself is enlightenment. Now, to me, to my mind, that's beautiful. And it's why I have such an affection for Dogen. Now, in the practice of Zen, we tend to steer students away from words and letters because they are so intoxicating to the linear mind and can, in fact, fool someone into thinking that knowing is the same as insight. You know, there are people, I think, that they've read so much and they're so smart that they think that they understand enlightenment, but they're confusing that with the direct experience of it. So that knowing and insight are not the same, Dogen would say, and at the very same time, they're both expressions of enlightenment. And what Dogen helps us do is that we can routinely lean in one direction, you know, that away from words toward insight, you know, creating a prejudice toward non-separation. That what we do is that we subtly lean in the direction of oneness and push away all the separation that also exists at the same time. So that creates a prejudice, which is just one more delusion. And in the end, there are no gaps. It's all the same thing. It's all being manifested from the same place. Now, Dogen famously said, all beings are fundamentally enlightened. And so it's reasonable to ask, as he did during his travels in China, if this is the case, if it's the case that all beings already are fundamentally enlightened, and we are whole from the beginningless beginning, there's another expression, beginningless beginning. Right? We know from our practice that one way of looking at it, there is no beginning and there is no end. But there's also a beginning and there's also an end. Dogen says the beginningless beginning, acknowledging both in the same statement. So we are whole from the beginningless beginning. So why do we practice? And Dogen's answer is we practice because we do not know who or what we are. but as the result of many causes, including suffering, we aspire to know. And that aspiration leads many people to begin the practice of Zazen. And Dogen described this. People, those of us, all of us, who have intrinsically been born with wisdom, intrinsically been born enlightened. He describes the process of seeking as wisdom seeking wisdom. I was going to read a few things from here, but I think I'm going to end there. It's enough Dogen for one.